This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's Christmas time, but it's dark days. In fact, as we record this, it is the winter solstice. It's gray. There's not a lot of light. There's some light at the end of the tunnel with the advent of the vaccines, although there's a lot of uncertainty. Meanwhile, they're talking about a new, even more communicable form of COVID-19 that has broken out in the UK. And so as we approach 2021, we're looking for a little bit of solace, a little bit of inspiration, a little bit of cheering up. I can't think of a better person to help deliver that message than today's guest, Dr. Christian Conte. He's one of the country's most accomplished mental health specialists, focusing on the field of anger and emotional management. Now, we talked to him in the height of the pandemic. That was about 8 months ago, and he offered us some very, very practical tips for how to cope with the lockdown. Dr. Conte is also one of only a handful of people who have what's called Level 5 Anger Management Certification. That's the highest level possible, so he can diffuse a rampaging Tyrannosaurus Rex, I think. He's the creator of something called Yield Theory, and he is very, very active on video. His book is entitled Walking Through Anger. He's got a YouTube channel. You can check out some of his high-performing videos, including 10 Ways to Discipline Your Children. That's a favorite. Christian, it's a pleasure having you here on the winter solstice. I could use a little cheering up. So,
hey, thanks.
What do you got?
I love being on your show. And listen, we're at literally the winter solstice. I mean, think about this. People have been celebrating or at least experiencing this day for millennia.
Yeah.
So it's kind of we're right here with it.
Yeah, well, it is. But, you know, in years past, a primitive man would gaze at the waning sun, and it was a portent of doom. But there was always that celebration when they had primitive calendars. They were able to sort of figure this out with basic astronomy, that at a certain point, things were going to start getting better, gradually, slowly, but inexorably.
These were do you remember the myths of Demeter and Core, or probably her more well-known name, Persephone? And Demeter, of course, goddess of food. And so the whole concept was her daughter, Persephone, got taken away by Hades, and she would go away and she would have to spend half the year underground and half the year above ground. And that was really the onset of the myths of the dying and reviving gods, and why this date actually has so much significance for people across cultures throughout the world.
Right, in all religions. You know, we lit the Hanukkah candles, and that let in a little bit of light amidst the darkness. I think it's a festival of lights. And there's lots of lights for Christmas, and there are lots of lights for other holidays and other denominations. So do you have advice for people who were experiencing the gloom, the hopelessness, the despair that is especially resonant this season?
Yes, you know, there's a great story about a seed. There were a bunch of seeds in the beginning of the dawn of nature. And this being, this God, was going through and spreading these seeds. And all the seeds, they thought, well, we're going to wake up. We're going to wake up and we're going to experience this sun and we're going to be growing and everything. But left and right, they found that it was wintertime. It was darkness. It was really like today. And what they found was they couldn't wake up because there was so much rain and snow and darkness. But there was one seed that decided, he said, you know what? I'm not waiting for some sun. So he started to look for the light inward. And he just focused on that inward light, and he felt it. And he, my goodness, he ended up breaking through. And when he came through, he actually developed, bloomed. The rest of the seeds, they all perished. And it was a great story for a lesson for, look, when we're in this darkness, we got to look inside of us. We have to look in our own light, and we all have that.
So in working with clients and in working, you know, in communicating, what are some of the things that you're encountering? You know, impatience, anger, polarization. I think it all gets worse in a time of crisis somehow.
It does. You know what? I see a lot of people locked into whatever they believe. So whatever you believe, whatever your political philosophy, religious beliefs, people are really locking into their beliefs. And on one sense, that can be beautiful. If it brings you peace, that's awesome. But in another way, it's really detrimental because, unfortunately, the people I work with, I specialize in working with people convicted of violent crimes. I'm in the prisons. I'm doing a lot of work in the prisons right now. People get really attached to what they believe, and they get really angry when other people believe differently. And that's what I'm encountering a ton of right now.
Well, I don't think you have to go to a prison to find deeply entrenched beliefs these days. I mean, our recent political campaign didn't help very much, and there's a lot of bad blood that continues going forward. Also, I think there's some polarization around the vaccine question. I think a lot of people have skin in the game on both sides. On the one hand, you know, people who are believers in high-tech medicine, that medicine's going to deliver us from the woes of mankind. But other people who have a deep distrust of conventional medicine for either personal reasons or ideological reasons, they're betting against the vaccine. And, it's hard to find a measured approach to what things are going to look like in 2021. There's a lot of uncertainty. I mean, 2021 might be, you know, a renaissance, breathing a sigh of relief as the vaccine recedes. It could also bring us disappointment if the vaccine doesn't really work well, or the specter of a lot of side effects. So tremendous uncertainty as we approach the new year.
It does. And you and I remember, maybe our education brought us to different degrees, but like our basic around science was that the definition of science, it has to have falsifiability. We have to be able to look at anything we do and say, we might observe something new, and then if we're really following science, we have to drop what we believed beforehand. Mm-hmm. And that's the basic premise of science.
Right. But it's no preconceptions. Observe, you know, do an experiment. In fact, there's this whole thing of what's called the null hypothesis, which means that we take, in order to prove something, we basically start from a position of let's disprove it. You know, let's prove that this is not ineffective, in other words.
Yeah.
And coming from a place of skepticism.
And in the 1990s, when I got my degree, it was kind of cool because I was in school during the time when it shifted from taking a directional hypothesis philosophies, which people would, our professors would be like, no, you need to assert something and then try to change it. But by the time I got to doing my dissertation, it was actually in vogue to take the null hypothesis. It became like, look, if you take a directional hypothesis, you're too susceptible to confirmation bias.
So you need confirmation bias is big time these days. You know, people who just, you know, they just turn the channel, and you literally can do that on TV. It's like, I don't like what I'm hearing. I'm going to go to the opposite, you know, viewpoint.
Yep, exactly. So yeah, I see that. I see this in a huge way. People are like struggling with this. What I try to challenge people with constantly, first, I try to teach people what confirmation bias is. I actually just put out a really fascinating story on my YouTube channel about confirmation bias. And I specialize in working with people convicted of violent crimes. Mm-hmm. And so I tell this mythological story that actually comes from 1001 Arabian Nights. Mm-hmm. And then talk about how this violent offender really challenged it. It's kind of a cool story called Three Apples. But what was neat is confirmation bias, the tendency for us to look for, to confirm what we already believe. But I love how you said it. You hit the nail on the head. Like, it's so present right now that it's feeding people's anger. And so part of this is being able to challenge yourself, challenge your own ego, challenge your own certainties. And you and I know that's not really easy for people to do.
No, and indeed. You work a lot with children, and, you know, it's got to be really tough on children. You know, you provided advice in a really popular video, 10 Ways to Discipline Your Children, and there's some great advice there because it's you know, whacking your kid, not good. There are much better ways to shape the behavior of children. But kids these days, I mean, I really feel sorry for them. Do you have advice for parents and grandparents during this time?
I do. Like, I really don't want to, I really try to teach people, don't get so focused on one aspect or one threat or one danger that you throw out all other dangers. So, for instance, when children, especially all those parents out there with young children, your children learn a ridiculous amount by watching faces. And if your children, I feel so bad for people with young children right now, because if they're around school where their teachers are in masks, there is a huge part of our brain called mirror neurons that are being stunted right now. They're being stunted because children aren't able to actually learn by watching the faces.
Reading expressions is a very, very important part of maturation and emotional development and socialization.
Exactly. So I think it's wise for parents to step back and say, okay, listen, is this virus challenging to the world? I'm sure it is. Are there other threats to us? Yeah, let's not throw out absolutely everything, because I'm seeing a lot of increase in suicidal behaviors, in addiction. I'm seeing an increase in abusive behaviors, domestic violence. All these things are happening, and for some reason, we have allowed a narrative to come across that none of those things matter anymore. And the only thing that matters is, you know, a detrimental, you know, contagious moment that is, I think, you know better than I do, but it looks like the data is demonstrating 99% of people who get it get over it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's challenging. It's an interesting time, what we're throwing out.
Indeed. So, you know, one of the things that is a concern is that the country seems to be in the grips of a crime wave. Criminal acts are increasing. The police, in some ways, are being constrained. Many police departments are demoralized. What insights are you gaining about this when you talk to the prison population? Do they feel like, oh, you know, it's open season, the penalties are reduced, you know, they want to empty the jails, you know, maybe we can get out there and wreak some more havoc? Or what's your take on that?
Yeah, I definitely am. I would love to say that I'm not. I would love to say that I'm not the human being who's actually in maximum security prisons listening to inmates, but that's actually what I do every single day of my life. And so I'm in there every week. And yes, I definitely hear people saying, it's kind of laughable. It's laughable because it's a good time to be able to break the law and think, listen, if you even try to catch me for doing something I'm doing, there's something wrong with you. And it's
the
funny
the courts are clogged. You know, it's, I recently was summoned for jury duty. And I thought, this is really crazy. It's like the peak of the pandemic. The restaurants are closed. They want me to go show up for jury duty. And then I called them up and they said, oh, ignore that because we're not going to be doing that for another 6 months. We'll call you later. You know, so I think, okay, great. I don't have to do jury duty, but you know, who's processing the crimes? You know, who's, you know, where's the judicial system these days when there are no juries?
Right. It's scary. Listen, it's scary. And again, this is where confirmation bias comes in, because if people already believe, if their only confirmation, their only belief is this virus is killing the whole world and wiping the world out, then yeah, they're going to gloss over all this other stuff and think, oh, it can't be that big of a deal if people are committing crimes because we're all dying from this terrible disease. And it's unfortunate because it's really blinded a lot of people.
So your take on that, you know, with the deep psychological insight that you bring to this situation is that there's the reality of this, and there's a practical reality in terms of, you know, who's vulnerable and the reality that some people get very sick and some people die. But you see that the fear factor is outweighing the practical aspects of this, and that's to the detriment of so many more people than even those who will eventually get very sick and die from the disease.
Like, yeah, without a doubt. Like, I think you just summarized that really accurately. I think that it would be, again, we come back to falsifiability. So people come in with their opinions, they come in with their emotions. But if we set aside opinions and we set aside emotions and we look at data, data demonstrates that there have been other situations, SARS, there have been other situations within the last 10 years that have looked similar. But for whatever reason, now we highlight, we maximize mm-hmm. every moment. And the fear, listen, the fear that I'm seeing, I really feel for people. Like, I feel genuinely, like, if you're sitting there in fear and you're thinking no one's leaving their house, no one's doing this, I'm blown away when I hear people talk like that, because I'm also out in the world, because mm-hmm. my job is to travel all over our state
right.
and to go into prisons and diffuse like potential riots. So I'm all over the state.
And you don't flaunt the rules. I mean, you wear a mask, you know, you observe social distancing.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not like you're a coronavirus denialist.
Right. Absolutely. Listen, I was a germaphobe before. I'm a germaphobe all the way through. I take my vitamins. I exercise. Body, mind, spirit. Like, I take care of myself every day. I have healthy habits. I socially distance. I have a mask on. Like, all of that. Absolutely. I would never downplay that for a second. The reality is, this is real and it can definitely impact people. What the part that I try to come at with a scientific view is this: that is not the only threat to our world right now. Mm-hmm. Like, if people how much domestic violence and abuse that is going unchecked is going on right now, I promise you that would be a pandemic. If you remember, not even 2 years ago where we looked at the epidemic of opioids. Do you think
yes,
that went
exactly.
away?
And we're talking, if not well beyond tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people dying of this pandemic of opiate addiction and the consequences. So that's up there.
That did hey, that's the reality. It didn't go away. Neither did that didn't go away. Suicide is up. Abuse. Listen, one of the scariest realities that it's unfortunate that the world doesn't I'm sorry what I specialize in with violence. You know, I wish I didn't know what I know, but do you understand that when this occurred, people stopped reporting abuse?
Yeah.
Now, this is crazy because people are home more. They are absolutely around their children more in heightened stress. So less money, around each other more, asked to do more. Abuse all of a sudden magically went away. No, it's not being reported. So imagine how many countless children are suffering right now because people aren't reporting it because they
children,
don't have to.
Children, spouses, there's elder abuse as well. So there's a lot of that going on. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really hard for me when someone who only sees whatever the media tells them comes in and says, oh, no, this is the end of the world. Listen, okay, I appreciate your perspective. Again, I'm not a absolutely, it's real. It's a real thing. But, like, how are you really getting rid of everything else that exists right now? It's just not – it's not scientific, that's for sure.
So you're an expert in anger management. Explain me this. How is it that people are literally coming to blows over whether to wear a mask? People are being, engaging in fights, arguments. There's so much tension around this issue. Is it simply that fear gets translated into anger sometimes? This is like a psychological flip that the brain does.
Well, that's exactly it. So let's say you're driving down the road and someone almost cuts you off. They don't hit your car, but they almost hit your car. And you get this rush of adrenaline, this rush of anger. The reality is that the anger occurs because your body has been flooded with cortisol and adrenaline. And when you lash out in anger, you release endorphins. So you actually physically feel better screaming at that car that almost hit you.
They okay, actually so say that when you swear, this actually alleviates pain and it alleviates, I mean, so that's just by cursing, issue a series of expletives, that somehow has a soothing effect. So maybe it's like a self-soothing behavior.
Yeah. Yes, not only have I read the research around that, but I actually anecdotally, I've done that with my daughter. Like I remember my daughter was little and she would be in pain and I would say, okay, let's say, we would say a cuss word together and then she would smile, whatever. But I was like, listen, this is how you're getting the energy out. That's cool. If you need to get the energy out, but let's come back to this concept. So if someone cuts you off, the fear is, oh no, my life was threatened. And so you lash out. Now we take that same concept and we look, and if somebody is steeped in the belief that if someone else doesn't have a mask on, they are directly threatening their lives, then that's the same principle of someone cutting you off in traffic. And the part that I have been trying to get out to the world is this. Please challenge the reality that if someone doesn't have a mask on, they are killing you and your family. Mm-hmm. That's not what's happening.
So we can have public-spirited messages, wear a mask, okay, fine, and that's advisable. But when we take it to the extreme and we use it as a pretext for acting out and hostility and, looking at people as inferiors because they, maybe at a street corner and their glasses are fogging up, as so often happens to me, and I lower my mask. Let's have a little empathy.
Right, exactly. And look, I think there is also a reality of crying wolf. So I'm not saying that this isn't real, but what I am saying is this. It's very challenging when the outside world tells you to be afraid of something that you might have experienced yourself. So I was in a prison one time and I was working with an officer who had COVID and he said, yeah, you know, I had a rough night. It was a rough night, but honestly, it was no worse than the flu I had the year before that. He said, but yeah, it sucked, but yeah, I'm over it and everything. He was 78. So now people are telling me I'm supposed to be scared to death, but I've already experienced this. I'm 78. I've been a smoker for 35 years and this rough night. And now people are telling me I'm supposed to be deadly afraid of something I've already experienced and I'm over now. And so I said, yeah, you know what? When the world tells you to not trust your own experience, That's called crying wolf, and they tell it to you enough, mm-hmm. and then you go, wait. So again, please wear your mask, take precautions, don't test it. It's not about testing it. But at the same time, there's got to be a balance of saying, there's life to live right now. There's life to live. And I think we're outweighing our solutions, outweighing what's actually going on.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to pause because, as you know, Christian, we divide our podcast into two parts. In part two, some more practical suggestions for how to weather this winter of our discontent, a lot of uncertainty going forward into 2021, and glimmers of hope, but also some ominous predictions about the duration of this pandemic. Dr. Christian Conte, one of the country's most accomplished mental health specialists and an anger management expert. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.